So I'm going to introduce our guest speaker, Tom. Keep in mind that once we begin, this will be turned into an MP3 and then will be distributed to our Board of Directors Talent Bank. We have about 800 board members around the world. Tom is an Associated Press award-winning broadcaster. He's a certified management consultant through the Institute of Management Consultants, or the IMC. For those of you who are not familiar with them, in the world of management consulting, the IMC would be the sort of the moral equivalent of a CPA for an accountant. It would be if you go to a doctor, FACS, Fellow of the American College of Surgery. So it's just a designation given for completion of excellence. Tom brings over 20 years of on-air media experience in major markets in the United States, including Boston, and 15 years of strategic communications consulting experience with CEOs at IBM, Iron Mountain, Millipore, Roche, Bosch, Hewlett-Packard, MIT, and others. I worked with Tom at one of those companies, and I know he really earns and retains the respect of the CEOs that he works with. Tom is a board member and director of the communications for IMC. He's a board member of WEST, Women Entrepreneurs in Science and Technology. He's a regular speaker at the Harvard School of Public Health and numerous business groups. He's a former board member of the Society of Professional Consultants and a professional member of the National Speakers Association. Tom is also a former adjunct professor in the Communication Studies Department at Emerson College. So I'm going to now wire Tom up.
Thanks, sir. Don't hold that media stuff against me.
Okay, there you go.
Communications is such a broad and somewhat abstract term. All the business gurus write of communications, Jim Collins in Good to Great, and Jack Welch and Lou Gerstner and Steve Jobs, the Isaacson biography. But very few really get down to the nuts and bolts of how to improve communications and how to do it. It's also abstract in the sense of what does communications mean? It's kind of like technology to, you know, my son who's a new doctor, it means electronic medical records, and to my mom it might mean, or your mom, I've lost mine, but your mom, it might mean the remote control. So those are two fairly broad and abstract terms. And I'd like this to be very interactive, to have a discussion this evening about best practice board communications, what you've seen go well, and what you've seen go not so well. And you probably have very good examples of both. Boards function only as well as the communications among its members. I think we can all agree on that. I think we can all agree that there are kind of two meetings or two groups going on in any board meeting. It's a meeting of the directors and the managers. And there are really two separate groups involved there. And the role of the board member is to play kind of two roles, an advisor and a cop, if you will. So given those aspects of board meetings, and you all have been through many, 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 maybe too many, and too long board meetings. Let's start with those best practices. What have you seen in communications at board meetings that you thought has worked, has gone well?
I think when people are prepared and when agendas and good information is provided in advance, I think that really helps the communication so that people feel like what they have to offer at the meeting has been thought about a little bit, that things aren't just done to bullet and go. There's good preparation in advance. It helps the communication. It helps people trust each other better, that things aren't just going to be pulled out of the air.
Okay. What else?
One of the things that I would say is that the board meeting itself not be too scripted. in some of my experience, not the boards I'm on, but in some of the clients I served in my prior life, I had one where the board meeting was so scripted in order to move it along. It really wasn't, we spoke out of turn, so to speak. It was sort of like, you know, you weren't supposed to bring up a concern or something. So there wasn't an open, transparent feeling.
Do you notice there's kind of a board culture, too? Different boards have different cultures. Invariably, most stick to their agenda, but some stick to the time. Some don't even try to. Other thoughts?
I think making sure it's a good discussion, not too much presentation, that there's a little bit along the lines of what you were saying, that there's that give and take, it's not overly formal, I think is important. This is probably a bit of an anomaly, but when you're sitting on the school committee, it's also a public meeting, which creates kind of an interesting dynamic, and it, to me, it has a tendency to be overly scripted. So, you know, one of the things I'm kind of trying to work with my colleagues on in that board is to be more comfortable with real debate in a public setting. And so I don't, it's probably a little tangential to this conversation.
Well, I want to touch on media a little later because that's another dynamic. And I don't know if you're all aware of this Herbalife issue in the news. Just the last couple of days, between Aikman and Icon, there's this.
Could you give us a summary?
Power play. I'm going to talk about media in a bit, but the essential summary on Herbalife right now is that Carl Icahn is betting on Herbalife, and Aikman, I forget his first name, is betting against them. Aikman supplied a former executive of Herbalife to ABC News as a whistleblower for an interview. He did the interview, but then ABC found out after the interview, not after it aired, but after they interviewed him, that Aikman had paid this guy a lot of money to do this interview, and they had not disclosed it. So Larry likes to call it when it hits the fan, you know, when you're dealing with the media. Let's get to that in a bit. Let's go back to these best practices. And I would add, a gentleman I talked to this afternoon who's been to thousands of board meetings, I said, what would you do to improve board meetings? He said, set a time for strategy, for big picture discussion, 30,000 feet. He said, very few board meetings I've attended ever set a time on the agenda for a strategy discussion. And I think that's really important. Have you found that that is the case with boards you've been involved in?
Yes.
I mean, absolutely. I think that the point is that, as we said, that often the board meeting itself is set up with a very scripted, so, okay, we deal with this, deal with that, sort of check, check, check. And yet, if you're authentically doing strategy work, first of all, people have to get informed as to what the real issues are, which are often not easy to understand. And you have to be willing to focus, spend the time to understand and then get everybody to dialogue about how they feel about it. So that if you're making any significant changes, people really understand the choices that you're making. And I'm actually in a situation where that's happening next week at the board that I'm on, where I said we shouldn't be having this discussion as part of a regular board meeting. We should have a separate meeting specifically to focus on strategy.
A board that I'm on sets aside, we meet for 2 days, and sets aside a half a day to do precisely that.
How many of you find that in board meetings that you attend regularly, there is at least a strategy agenda item, big picture agenda item? Interesting, only about half. Other thoughts, other best practices, things that you've seen that go well that you would suggest before we get to those things that you're not so crazy about?
Well, I think sometimes there's this law of unintended consequence where you can talk a lot about high-level strategy, and then you get lost in the clouds of that, and it's very hard sometimes to direct the other part of the conversation, which would be what will be the results, and actually play out a range of scenarios for that. Because I've seen in the past some situations where at the policy level things appear to be the right way to proceed, and then 6 months or 12 months later you look back and you realize that you really haven't vetted that out in a practical level. And I think there's a little bit of, it's ambiguity in, at the board level, because you don't know how deep to go with these discussions, because you're supposed to be high up in the policy, but I really struggle sometimes with thinking about how to formulate correct policy without taking into effect the details of how that will actually be played out within the troops, so to speak.
How much of that is a facilitator role, and how effective is the facilitator at keeping it not only on track, but making sure that everyone is involved in the discussion?
I think it, a facilitator can help, but I think unless everybody has kind of lessons learned or been in the foxholes with something like that, it's very hard to focus that, because the natural intention, I think, of a board is to be very high level and almost be dismissive of anything that has practical application. I shouldn't say practical, but driving the actual implication of those theories.
Implementable,
yes,
strategy.
I think implementation, yeah. We tend to play off to the actual officers of the company and the people who report to them. And I think that can be very dangerous when you, you know, it's almost like I visualize a whip. At the front, you're the director and you're cracking it here, but at the very end, you know, it's much more, the oscillation is very high, and sometimes we're not focusing on the entire pattern of this whip.
I'm struck that the word board can be so confusing, because that one word actually means a myriad of different things that are actually very different in nature. So one of the things that I'm currently doing is I've got some projects with private equity backed companies where the private equity partners have invested in a founder. And now the founder is, his job is the same, but the power structure is totally different. So whereas the founder reported to a founder dominated board, now he reports to a private equity dominated board. Mm-hmm. And the only similarities of the two is the name board. And what happens is there often isn't an infrastructure in place to teach the founder the new rules of the road.
Mm-hmm.
And they learn it by making mistakes. Mm-hmm. The problem is, you don't get too many mistakes.
Sometimes to their demise, yes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, here's an extremely common one. When you have a founder-dominated company, friends and families and supporters, you know, there was a problem. I fix the problem and I report to you, problem solved. And you, as the friends and family and supporter and my CPA and my lawyer, you breathe a sigh of relief and say, you know, we can get through this, this is no problem. I do the very same thing with a private equity dominated board, and the reaction is they smile and nod and think, ah, today you withheld important information from me and only disclosed it after the fact. I wonder what else you're withholding from me. I mean, you just don't do that, but nobody teaches these, you know. As I get older, I get more respectful.
You're getting older?
Difficulty unlearning is, particularly for successful people. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't happen with good intentions.
Larry has a wonderful story about how the term board came to be, which is probably too long for this group, but I don't know how long. But it's an interesting dynamic. I've seen Larry give several talks, and that's one of your better talks. Ask him sometime. Other thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, this kind of touches on it as well, which I've seen actually with every board that I've worked with, except for one that has no staff, which is the management and the board maybe don't even have an agreement as to who has which roles in the organization and in that meeting. So where do we want management input and where do we not? Because sometimes I've seen it derail meetings, say talking about a really high level strategy, and then they say, well, wait a minute, when it gets to me, this is problem I have, and then people are either dismissive or they get totally sucked into that. And so I've seen that as a big problem with every board.
Well, that kind of leads into this discussion of what problems have you seen? What are the things that you've seen that you don't like? Let me add one more before we go to that topic, though. Thought from this gentleman today. He said, the other thing I would like to see to improve board meetings is to have some informal time built into every meeting, whether it's breakfast or lunch. Doesn't have to be an off-site or anything like that, but some informal time built in for people to talk outside the meeting, to establish or solidify those relationships. Now, those offline discussions are another topic we can discuss here. There are advantages and disadvantages of those. Some feel left out in the cold. Other times you can come to consensus before, you know, the item comes up. But he said some informal time at every meeting, he said, I think is one of the most essential parts of any board meeting. Other thoughts now that we're there to things that you've seen that don't work and maybe how to fix them.
Yeah, I was just going to pick up on that point. I used to work closely with the board of Cognizant, which is a fairly large technology outsourcing company. I worked for the CEO. And one of the practices that we put in was just the CEO meeting informally with the board to talk about succession and talent management, because that was something that hadn't had enough attention. So that was, I think, a best practice that worked well. Hmm. The other thing I wanted to do is come back, I think, is it Peter? Come back. We actually used to bring Ram Charan in to help run the strategy meeting of the year. But the challenge was it was a little too disconnected from the other meetings. And we actually moved to a different approach where we had our head of strategy facilitate that day or two mm-hmm. long meeting. And it actually led to, you know, equally as good discussions about where the business needed to go, but better connectivity to actually executing.
One of the things I'm finding with private equity dominated boards is you have this very toxic equation of a very bright and very proud founder dealing with very bright and very egocentric private equity people. And if the CEO first hears about it at the board meeting, he's probably not going to be the CEO for very long. He's got to have back channel communications and get the information before the meeting, which is what your person was talking about. And two models that I saw which have been very effective. One was a CEO founder who then brought private equity on, hired a general counsel who also had a relationship with the lead private equity person in another life. Mm-hmm. And so this general counsel would call everybody on the board and canvass everybody on the board before the board meeting and then give the CEO a sense of what was going to happen at the board meeting. So the CEO said, one is I never was surprised when I went to a board meeting. And two, I could listen to the general counsel because he reported to me. And if the private equity partner had said the same thing, my dander would have gone up. Another version of this I've seen where the board will allow the CEO to select one person to be on the board, and it's understood that that person is the CEO's
representative.
And so the private equity partners will talk to the CEO's representative. CEO's representative will then talk to the CEO. Mm-hmm. Again, it's just an issue that you have very proud founders who just, they have difficulty listening. It's a dual side of entrepreneurship. You don't become an entrepreneur if you're not a stubborn son of a bitch. But if you're a stubborn son of a bitch, you're not going to make it very long with a private equity board.
That brought up something I've seen work well in a company too. I don't know how much you believe in or rely on assessments like DISC assessments. I find them a very useful tool in my work in communications development. Knowing that someone is a D or an I or an S or a C really gives you a feel for the way they're going to approach a problem and a discussion. And if others know people's natural gravitation toward being a very high D type, you know, let's move person or a relationship person or a very data-oriented person, it gives you a better understanding of how you can best communicate with them and maybe why they're approaching something in a certain way. I don't sell disc. I don't have any interest, vested interest in it, but they also offer an instrument. I think it's called Indra, where they will put a team together. A team of people, whether it be a board or hundreds, can take a disc assessment, and it will show individual profiles. And disc always has your natural and what they call adapted style. Your natural style might be this. Your adapted style in business might be a little different. But then they show the team on a spectrum and show where various members of the team stand on that spectrum. You want very governance-oriented, financial-oriented people on the board, but you also want some people who are more the strategy, the drivers, the marketing, the influencers. You want a good mix of folks. And sometimes when you have a group in any given area, that can kind of drive not only the discussion, but some of the decisions, which may not be in the best interest.
And as a recruiter, I see this when they said, we want somebody who's competent and going to be collegial with us. And often, that really translates into somebody who thinks like
me. Yeah, thinks our way.
And so we will have free and open discussions everywhere from A to B.
Yeah.
And then they say we're free and we have open discussions. But of course, they blocked out the people who might have been...
But no conflict.
Right, so they feel really good about their...
We want to talk about everything, but no conflict. And some people are naturally conflict averse, and that shows up in DISC as well, too. And that's okay, but it's better if you understand that that's where the person's coming from. Any other thoughts on things you'd like to see, best practices? We can get back to this to kind of wrap up, but...
In cases where you're making strategic decisions or strategic considerations, my experience has been that don't bring up an issue and decide it at a single board meeting. You bring it up, allow people to absorb it, let them go back, ruminate on it, discuss with the other board members, and at least bring it up a subsequent time, perhaps two, so that you can have a fuller vetting of opinions and thoughts.
I like to call that the incubation period. It really needs time to incubate.
One board that I'm on does that. They sort of call it the three bites of the apple. And, you know, it's they're almost done with a concept or an idea of what they want to do when they present it. But you never feel like, as a board, that you're being presented something you have to decide that day. Mm-hmm. Or if you got the materials 2 weeks before, all of a sudden you've got this... We're going to change this investment strategy, and we want to know right now.
That's a sure way to run into those unintended consequences.
So this gives you more time to think about it. But another thing that we do on one, you know, the communication beforehand or whatever, and following up on what Mindy said, that everybody's read the material and is well prepared, that the independent trustees get together the night before, and we go over what everybody's hot button was, or two or three out of where what they read in the material. So then we kind of suss out where we're going to really spend the time on, you know, and sometimes things get sort of resolved among the board members so that if somebody's deep concern about something gets addressed and they say, okay, you know, maybe it's not, you know, worth that much time.
So. Good way to put it.
Do you use the Delphi technique at board meetings?
Not familiar with it.
This is a it's a very cool technology that's it's free. You can go to freepoll.com, and the idea is how many of you have remember groupthink from your psychology classes? You know, you start with an idea. Tom says, you know, I think we ought to paint the walls gray. Warren says, yeah, I think we ought to paint the walls gray. And by the time it gets to Peter, I'm thinking to myself, the walls are going to get painted gray. I think it's a stupid idea. I think it's a waste of money. But I'm not going to, you know, go against the group. Mm-hmm. So what the hell? And so I will say, yeah, absolutely, we'll paint the walls gray. Hmm. And, you know, You know, how many of you have been involved in corporate decisions that really were groupthink? Not very.
Because we discussed A and B.
Yeah. So the Delphi technique is, it began, I can give you a very specific example. I live in the next town to you, in a town called Wayland. We have a town meeting. And so the selectmen sit at the head of the stage. And issues are then voted. And then the chairman, then you have to raise your hands. Well, just by virtue of the fact that the selectmen can see who's raising their hands, they can bias the votes.
True. Same thing happens in Lincoln.
Get Warren angry for this. It's a stupid idea. Okay, Warren, fine. And then they move to a Delphi technique where everybody in the audience gets a device. And then they say, well, now we're going to vote. And you can vote yes, no. And you push a button, and your own vote is not, nobody knows who voted. They just see the total tabulation. And ever since they've done that, the power of the selectmen has
diminished,
has reduced.
Yeah.
So it's a very cool technique. And again, it's free, freepoll.com. You can set it up. I'm actually going to be running a board of directors meeting, and one of the issues for this organization is, have we outlived our usefulness as a nonprofit? Is it time to just declare victory and just go out of business, have a party, and finish it? Well, the fact that the founder of the organization is in the room, I think, is going to make a vote like that extremely difficult. But with the Delphi technique, it's more likely we can get an honest opinion.
Hmm. Rick.
Well, I'm going to make a point about meeting in an executive session, but in decision making, the strength of how, whether people feel strongly about a subject or weak about a subject, is one of the things that you should take into account. And I think that's an argument against doing that, or when one's actually making decisions. But I have tried, if the board I'm on isn't meeting an executive session without the CEO, to get that implemented. And I've had experience when I was chairman of the board of the Community Development Finance Corporation, which the president was really, really upset by my getting this implemented. And generally speaking, the CEO or whoever it is feels very threatened by that. The board is meeting without me, and what are they going to say about me? And the truth is, my observation is that the discussion that happens without the CEO and senior staff is enormously helpful to the CEO, because people are much more willing to speak honestly without he or she being there, in ways that reveal what the real issues are, that for whatever set of reasons, people are less willing to talk when they're in the room.
We have about 17 minutes here, and I want to get to executive session. I want to touch on media. And what you just mentioned leads into another discussion I had today with one of the things that drives people crazy about many board meetings is managers coming in and, as this gentleman put it, delivering their pablum.
Right.
Those or other things that you've seen that you don't like from a communications point of view, those worst case board scenarios.
What does that mean?
Just delivering their, you know, everything is wonderful, we're doing all this great stuff, it's all BS. You know, and some of it may be true, but they come in with their slide deck, and, you know, my pet peeve is they read the slides.
Yes. It may all be true, actually.
Yeah. This book by Bill Lane, and if you know a communications person, buy them this book. He talks about, and Jack Welch was a little full of Jack, but he talks about The insights are in how Jack Welch talked GE into becoming the world's greatest company. Now, you can argue that, but this guy was his communications VP. And the story of him being hired was that this guy was, I think, a major or a colonel in the Army. And Jack invited him in for an interview, and he had no interest in becoming Jack's VP of communications. And what, according to Bill Lane, turned the tide was when Jack said, look, the only condition on which I'll hire you is if I am the best speaker in the room, wherever I appear, head and shoulders above everyone else. That's my requirement. And unless you're ready to do that, I don't want you here. Well, you can argue, well, I mean, Jack, you know, the whole Jack Welch thing is an interesting discussion. He and Gerstner doing the same thing in parallel in the mid-90s with all this inertia at their respective companies with totally different personalities is an interesting discussion, too. But one of the best stories in this book is how they got rid of PowerPoint slides in Crotonville. In these management meetings, these strategy meetings in Crotonville, Lane tells the story of the last VP who ever used PowerPoint. They were phasing it out, and this guy got up with his PowerPoint slides and had two or three, and people started, I don't have a blank sheet of paper, wadding up paper balls and throwing them at him. And the first one or two, he kind of looked and was astounded. And by the fourth or fifth ball of paper, he turned off his slides. And Bill says that's the last time anybody ever used PowerPoint at Crotonville. Now, I can't, you know, I don't counsel my clients to throw away their slides, though that's a good goal. But a pet peeve of mine, too, is people who come into board presentations and they have all this stuff and they expect you to sit there through 50 slides, and it drives me crazy, and there's a way out of that. Other thoughts? Things you'd like to...
Can you do an investors meeting without slides?
Well, I totally hear what you're saying, because I think the new generations now, I mean, what comes to my mind is Steve Jobs, that style where it's austerity on the stage, and there might be three big screens, but they're very simple symbols.
Right.
And focus is mainly on talking in plain language for these things, and I think it's very powerful. To do it on the investment side, it depends on who your audience is and what the agenda is, but we've been trying to do that, and it turns out to be somewhat easy with certain topics, but very difficult with technical topics, and there is the tendency, you can tell right away when a speaker comes up,